Welcome to the Radio Today program. This week, we're focusing on the Audio Content Fund. The fund was launched 2 years ago with the promise of distributing £3 million of UK government money to indies for crafted public service content to be broadcast on community and commercial radio. Since then, they've funded 115 projects and ended up distributing £2.3 million in just 2 years thanks to additional funding from the DCMS during the pandemic. All the money goes to indies, 76 companies so far, but the content finds an audience by being broadcast on radio stations big and small. The projects have had a lot of range, from content about infertility on Magic, to discussions about domestic abuse on talk radio, to a radio soap opera taking on the Archers through syndication on 50 community radio stations. So with the Audio Content Fund being 2 years old, and with a new funding round opening right now, we asked commissioning panel member Kate Cocker to pick three projects that she's been impressed by personally and talk to the people behind them. To start with, she's talking about Coming In From The Cold, which is a documentary series for TalkSport that won a gold and a silver at the Arias last week.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics.
The Audio Content Fund is 2 years old and we funded 115 projects. So, looking back over three of those projects that we funded over the last 2 years, the first of those projects is Coming In From The Cold, which was made by Unedited for TalkSport. So I'm talking to Laurie Palacio from TalkSport and Andrew Spence, producer and idea genius from Unedited. Hello.
Hey, Kate, how you doing?
Hi.
Tell me about the programme and then we'll get into how the idea came about.
It's a documentary. It's the history of black footballers in the English game, basically. So it charts a linear history from the first black player to play in the professional English game, who was Arthur Wharton, to current day, Raheem Sterling, Marcus Rashford. We can go on and on. And it just basically charts the course of the stories from the trailblazers to the first person to play for England, the first person to not play for England, who was going to play for England, the first person to score for England. All the milestones, all the heartache, all the pioneering feats, all the inspirational stories across six parts. So it's about 6 hours. It's a binge and listen, as I say.
The applications come through and you kind of go next and on to the next one. And this one comes in and it's an idea like this comes in and you go, how long's he been sat on that one?
You know where I got the idea from? I'll blatantly say it. There was a documentary done on BBC4 called The Black Flash, 2008 or something, probably 2006, years ago, and I watched it, and I always remember it. It didn't start properly. I didn't think it was a full history, and I thought, if somebody could just do that properly from the beginning to where we are now, and I always remember it, and I thought, I'd like to do something like that, and then it just came. And it was the right time, right place. No, Laurie, really, to be totally honest, because I wouldn't have known about the Audio Content Fund if it wasn't for Laurie.
That's really interesting. So talk me through that then, Laurie. How did it all come about?
I'd worked with Andrew for a couple of years at Wireless. He was doing some stuff on talk radio. And then he and I sort of formed a bit of a friendship because he was doing talk radio and I was doing talk sport. And we'd been chatting about a lot of ideas about what Andrew could come and do and work for us on talk sport. On because he was a super duper football fan, you know, and he was getting a bit tired of paper reviews and all the other stuff that happens on talk radio. And he was producing some shows for us as an independent sort of, you know, freelancer. And yeah, this idea had obviously been sort of ruminating in his mind. And I think before the Audio Content Fund came around, I think you talked to me about it, hadn't you? Like, we'd had some success with a show that you guys, Unedited, had made for us with the Audio Content Fund, which was the Added Time program. And that was like that was our sort of first proper working relationship with the Audio Content Fund and with Unedited. And we'd been talking about this idea of a Black History Month sort of special programming schedule, and we hadn't really quite nailed it. And I think it was over a series of, you know, those kind of informal chats that you have at radio stations when you're sort of, you know, you're checking in and going, how's the week going, what's coming up on the show, oh yeah, you know. And Andrew would go on, you know, I've been talking to this person about that, and you know, and I think I can get into this person's phone book, and hopefully we can, you know, pull out a good guest list. And when the I think it was the second round or the third round of the Audio Content Fund that this would have been
four,
part of.
I think it was,
is it okay, there, yeah. You go, we were like, actually, you know what, Andrew, let's do this.
you obviously had it in your mind for some time. It sort of started to grow and evolve. As soon as you start going into production, where were the surprises for you? Did you get anything out of it that you were like, oh, didn't expect to get that?
Yeah, loads of stories. I think I have to say, our host on our narrators, Jessica Crichton and Amory Batson, being black, it helped a lot talking to a lot of the black players because they'd never talked about this before. And it was like a therapy session. We've got like over 60, 70 hours of raw audio.
Whoa.
Loads of stuff that didn't even make it into the cut. You listen to some of these conversations, you hear these players, they're like they're in therapy, they're just letting it all out of what happened because they've never talked about being racially abused by 50,000 people and stuff like that. So you were getting those kind of things. And Jess and Amory had a shared experience with them because they were black. Amory's uncle was Brendan Batson, who's one of the Three Degrees. Jess Crichton was a former semi-pro player. So you have that shared experience, so you can have that conversation, so you can get a lot more out of the players. So that was the thing that we realised when we were getting all this information. We were like, wow, this is very emotive and very emotional, telling stuff that we've never heard.
And Laurie, how have the audience received it?
It was a positive response. It was one where also I think people just couldn't believe some of the injustice. You know, there was a lot of stuff going on outside, you know, of the radio station. There was the Black Lives Movement was really sort of gathering pace, you know, which I think had sort of brought back to people's minds some of the important social justice questions that, you know, that were as yet unanswered. Is it the Jack Leslie story, Andrew, where he didn't make the England team because he was basically a man of colour, you know, and the FA at the time, even though he was by far and away the best player and he was scoring all the goals and he was, you know, leading the line for his team, he didn't make the England squad. And those kind of sort of moments, just people sort of go, man, that's so unfair. That's ridiculous. Like, how can that happen? How did that happen?
As the world returned to a new normal after the great war that claimed Walter Toll's life and those of millions of others, football returned. And as we entered the roaring 20s, the era of jazz, Josephine Baker and leaping Lindy Hoppers, a flying forward whose dad was from Jamaica began catching people's eyes on the South Coast. Jack Leslie was his name and goals were his game. Leslie was Plymouth Argyle's star player and he had it all. Pace, skill and deadly finishing. A prolific goal scorer and provider, he was a talent that burned so bright that he was picked for England, even though he played in the third tier. But then, FA selectors became aware of Jack's Caribbean heritage and the whole game changed.
How does a project like this benefit the station, Laurie?
Look, we've got some challenges. We had some challenges around the look and feel and sound of our radio station. And that wasn't because, you know, there was any sort of dark forces at work where we were like, you know, we can't do this or we can't do that. But we realized we needed to modernize our radio stations to better reflect the audiences that were engaging with us and the, you know, the players and the professionals that we were talking about. And this series had a big part to play in challenging those views of what talk sport was. I think where we are now is in part thanks to, like, you know, Lee Clayton was the program director, the head of TalkSport, who came in a couple of years ago and had as one of his missions a culture change internally but also externally. He really wants us to sort of be looked upon and seen upon in a different light, and having the support of Andrew, you know, in the background on some other projects as well, but also Unedited as a production company around two major, you know, series with the help of the Audio Content Fund has sort of left us feeling really positive about the progress we've made.
Andrew, that must have given you an enormous amount of confidence working with a station like TalkSport.
It's great. It's a great chance. I mean, we're a black-owned company and it's hard. I'm not going to lie. It's hard out there. We're trying to make content that isn't just black stuff. But we want, you know, you've got to start off somewhere. We know about the culture, so we make it. But teaming up with brands like TalkSport, it gets your work out there, and if you do good work you get recognized for it. But it does help, obviously, that you want something like this. The whole thing about, I think it's good about Audio Content Fund, you can do it properly. We could make a documentary about this, but it wouldn't have been, but without the help of Audio Content Fund, this detail, like Laurie says, because you just didn't have the budgets. But it helps you to do it, and then it can go out on TalkSport, and they, you know, TalkSport's got a massive audience, and again, it's about educating people. They can use it in different ways. You know what I mean? And then we move on to the next project.
As you know, as you said, your funding streams, etc., work in a certain way. But having been through the process, seen it work, do you think that then the station would look to fund those sorts of projects itself without the fund?
I'd say we'd
get ready,
like,
Andrew.
Yeah. I'd say we'd like to look at working with both, you know, because funding for this kind of programming isn't regularly written into our budgets, but maybe it should be, because we can have a case study to go, like, look, this worked for this reason, and metrics to measure things by. Equally, I would say the Audio Content Fund allows us to keep being brave, where, you know, often we have to make a business case for something that's out of the ordinary for us. And, you know, the Audio Content Fund allows us to sort of go into the lab, you know, and have the means of going, of doing something properly. You know, I think that's the challenge that we always have with the types of budgets that we work with, is that you want to do something really properly, and the pace that we go at, particularly with live sport, doesn't always allow us the time to do that. And I say that really advisedly, because I don't want to sort of criticize any of the internal, you know, teams that work really hard and tirelessly out of hours to deliver great documentary programming stuff and original ideas. But yeah, I just say, I think you need both.
Laurie Palacio from TalkSport and Andrew Spence from Unedited, talking about Coming In From the Cold, which was funded by the Audio Content Fund. We're looking back at three of the projects that the Audio Content Fund has funded over the last 2 years as we come into year three. There's been 115 projects in total, but one of the ones that I wanted to share with you was a project called Your Forest. Now, as a panel, obviously, every idea that we see is on a piece of paper, and there's a real joy in hearing the audio when it comes to life. And Your Forest was one of those that I couldn't wait to hear the minute that we saw the idea on paper. So I've got Hayley Ashby and Jeff Bird from Wild Rumpus, who produced Your Forest, and Jill Bowyer from Salford City Radio, that was one of the 11 stations that broadcast the content. Jeff, Hayley and Jill, hello.
Hello. Hello.
So let's go from the top. Hayley, just give me a brief outline of Your Forest, because I've listened, it's wonderful.
Thank you. Yeah, so Your Forest was born out of a global project that Wild Rumpus ran last year during the first lockdown. Our festival, Timber Festival, which is set in the National Forest in July, had to be postponed for obvious reasons. So instead of putting the festival online, what we decided to do was to try and retain the idea of timber, which is connection to nature and trees and bringing people together in an open space, and try and retain some of that. So we launched a project called Sounds of the Forest, which is, it was an opportunity for people across the world to go to their local forest or woodland and record a minute of the sounds around them. And they submitted those sounds to us, and we created this first global sound map of the world. And the response was absolutely incredible. We were overwhelmed, and it wasn't something that we necessarily predicted or expected, but it just really tapped into a moment, you know, when people were hearing nature more, they were spending more time at home and in their local area, so they were kind of spending time in green spaces that they perhaps hadn't known about before. So we took that model, because it was such a successful model, and we wanted to apply that to the UK and to urban areas. So looking at the importance of forests and woodlands and parks and trees to the people living in and around towns and cities, which obviously in COVID times, we've all seen how important those green spaces are. So we wanted to produce a radio series that had that idea, had that format, but went a bit deeper and looked at some themes relating to urban areas of trees. And then we invited the audiences, the radio station audiences, to go out and record their minute of sounds and submit it, and we created maps, which we had some wonderful submissions, all sorts of wildlife and, you know, the sounds of towns and cities as well. You know, it's just as important to hear about these green, you know, the sounds of these green spaces that are in these urban areas. So children playing, cars, planes overhead. It was all important to reflect, I think.
The sounds of woodlands can be wonderful. We would love you to record 60 seconds worth on your phone from your local trees to send to us as part of the Your Forest project. Because forests and woods can be magical places. And as we'll hear today, places that are really good for our health too. This is the young ornithologist Maya Rose Craig, also known as Bird Girl,
I feel like it's really obvious almost that going out into nature would have a positive impact on you. Like, I feel like we forget that we're animals too, and we belong out in nature too. Especially if you live in an urban area, going out into a green space, into a wild space, really does represent just like leaving all your stresses at home in the urban areas. Especially at the moment, like, we've seen so many people get into nature and things like that in the last year or so, and it's because it creates that escape from all of the just terrible things that are going on at the moment.
Jeff, when you come up with an idea like this, what kind of impact are you hoping it has on an individual that's listening to it?
On an individual? Well, I think for me it's twofold, really. The first is to try and encourage people to actually get out and to explore the green spaces around them, which they kind of were doing already, but perhaps it would lead them to look more closely. But I think for me, it's something about the power of audio, the very particular power of audio. So it's about encouraging people to stop, actually. So, you know, we've heard a lot about how people went walking during lockdown and tramping through green spaces. But there's something about stopping, turning on your recorder, pressing record, and simply listening for a minute that is actually quite transformative. It's a really profound experience. You hear things that you simply wouldn't if you were walking through, partly because of the sound of your own breath and the sound of your own footsteps, but partly because when you stop, you know, other things come towards you, you know, and although we've suggested a minute, people were sending in much longer files. And if you stand for 5 minutes, then the birds do come back, the ones that you've disturbed, that you know, that you would have disturbed had you been walking through. And for me, as in, you know, thinking about that as somebody who does record things in my job, you know,
I was going to say, you've just got people getting you wild track, haven't you?
Maybe, but I'm acutely aware of that personally, and the idea that people will have the chance to experience that, and they've talked about it, that the feedback has included that, and you know, people saying, wow, it was amazing, I've walked along that path 100 times, 500 times, but I've never actually stopped and listened. And I think for me that is the thing that I really hoped would come out of the project, and it really has.
Jill, how did it come to pass that you took this idea on? Did Hayley and Jeff approach you, or how did it happen?
Yeah, well, Hayley did, and I've got to say, we were bombarded by lots of audio content projects during the last year, and that's wonderful if you've got the facility to be able to take on all of that, which, you know, most of us haven't really. So we're a bit selective about what we choose, and we choose something that we've not got, you know, to broadcast normally. But this, when, as soon as I read Hayley's message, I knew that this was going to be a fantastic project, and that I wanted to be involved in that, and I wanted that on our station.
What specifically did you like about it?
Well, I liked lots of things, really. I thought it was, you know, it's the right time for talking about this kind of thing, the environment. Lots of people over the previous year had been at home because they'd been isolating, and started to notice the sounds around them that they don't normally, because we'd had less traffic, hadn't we, and everything else. But I just thought, I liked the actual contact that the audience were then going to get with the project, that they were going to be involved and they could record and then they could listen back and hear themselves. And people loved that. They loved the fact that they were going to be involved in the overall project.
And Hayley, do you, without being sort of glib, would you have done this if it wasn't for the Audio Content Fund?
No, I don't think we would have done. No, I think it was absolutely because we were able to reach a different audience and, you know, and apply for the funding. And I think, it sort of focused our minds on the way that we could make either a new idea or this idea that had worked so well in the Sounds of the Forest format, you know, how we could make that work in a different way. So I think it was absolutely down to the availability of the Audio Content Fund. And it was just it was so great to be able to bring that network of stations together. It's been so nice to work with those 11 stations. And, you know, Jill and Salford City Radio have just been fantastic throughout the whole project, just so enthusiastic and open to ideas and working with us. It's been a real kind of team effort. It's been a great experience.
Was it a lot of effort to get those 11 stations involved? Because I think it's one of the things that we... One of the things that is a requirement of the Audio Content Fund is obviously a little bit of reach. And so when we're dealing in the community radio space, they're naturally smaller stations with less reach. So one of the strategies has been to start combining the audiences of many stations. Was it hard work to get that to happen?
It is quite hard work, I think, because, you know, by the very nature of the way a community radio station works, you know, there's not a great deal of spare capacity with people to be able to, you know, as Jill said, read through a number of proposals that are coming from all directions, and be able to process that and sort of work out how that could fit in with an existing schedule. And you know, you need staff to be able to kind of process that information and to make it help make it happen. So it was difficult, but those that came on board really came on board, and you know, we're really enthusiastic about the, you know, the angle that we've chosen and that connection with the audience. And I think that's what people perhaps liked about this project, that, you know, it had that interactive element as well as the, you know, the kind of more informative themed packages.
What I thought was nice about Hayley's project was the fact that there was almost not an end, but the artists brought a conclusion to it, whereas a lot of the other projects, there's not necessarily something like that. So again, it was different in that way.
And I suppose the format, because Hayley ended up as 8 to 10 minute programmes.
It did.
So 8 to 10 minute programmes, and I suppose in terms of programming that, Jill, that shorter segment sort of made it a bit easier for you, did it?
It depends.
Oh, really? Okay.
I think because where you've got little snippets of audio, you know, within a station like ours, where people might only have, say, an hour,
yes,
of broadcast time, then if you put in 10 minutes in, then you know, you're taking quite a chunk out of somebody's show time. And and if it's, I mean, it depends where it's going. You know, we've got shows that this sits very nicely in. But I did a kind of combination. It was included in the environmental show, but it also went into you know, its own slot as well. So that was quite nice.
Yeah, it's interesting that you say that, Jill, because I think that did come out in conversations that I had with many stations in the, you know, in the process of pulling the network together. That it's, you know, you feel that you should be helping by providing content, but actually there's a lot of other work that goes on around it, and there's a lot to consider in terms of other content, which is perhaps fixed content, or, you know, something that you want to be able to get in addition to what we provide. So that was a good learning curve for me. You know, if we do something in the future, about just appreciating that and understanding that it's not that straightforward, and perhaps perhaps shorter pieces, or, you know,
or longer programmes even.
Or longer programmes even, yeah.
Yeah.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics, creators of the Bionics Studio. Listening, watching, reacting to and learning from every spoken word, caller, tweet and SMS to unmix, unlock and understand your content. The Bionics Studio transforms everything about radio except the way you make it.
I'm Kate Cocker, and on the Radio Today podcast this week, I've been taking a look at some of the projects funded by the Audio Content Fund in the last few years. So far, you've heard about a fairly traditional documentary format in Coming In From The Cold, and something really different and far more freeform from Your Forest. So for the third Audio Content Fund project, I wanted to give you something that was really topical and focused on audience issues. KISS Life is a Sunday night youth issues strand on the KISS network. To find out about it, I spoke to Ray Paul of Indie, the Playmaker Group, and Rebecca Frank, the content director of KISS. Rebecca and Ray, hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Okay, we're going to start with you, Ray. Can you give us a brief outline of KISS Life? What is it?
So KISS Life is a 12-week run of speaking about issues that particularly concern the black community, and a space on KISS's schedule where that conversation can be widened and discussed a bit more and a little bit more in depth. And yeah, an opportunity to talk about things that the network doesn't normally talk about in depth.
And how many weeks are we in now?
This is week 9 this week.
Week 9 of 12. Okay, so tell me, what makes it different for KISS?
From my perspective, it's the very classic thing of it's very difficult for commercial radio to make programs such as this, and the willingness is there, and having somebody like Rebecca at the helm at KISS makes it so much easier because she understands it and knows that there's a need and a want for it, and also there's a desire for it from the program makers to want to make shows like this as well. So the thing that makes it different is the fact that it's a change of pace. At the start of every show, we say it's a different change. It's a change of pace for KISS. It's not just kind of wall-to-wall music or links. We're going in depth, and we've had a range of guests from Sadiq Khan to Sean Bailey to John Barnes to, like, you know, we've had quite a wide range of guests. And it's just an opportunity that a lot of guests are saying, I didn't expect KISS to do something like this. And for us, that's where the kind of gold comes from, the fact that it is a curveball.
And Rebecca, have you seen that it's had a real impact on the audience as well?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's difficult with a sort of radio show to sort of see, but we've got quite small numbers on the podcast, and I would say sort of part of that isn't a reflection for me of like how the program's going down, more that this is not only the sort of first kind of program of this nature that we've done, but also the first podcast that we've done. So I would say, just from the kind of halo effect of the social content, the feedback that we're getting from unsolicited from our audience on the socials, the guests, like Ray says, and the effect actually it's had on the team is really, really important for me. So we've got a really diverse team at KISS, all different ages, all different backgrounds, people, you know, as ever trying to identify with the brand that makes sense to them. So it's really important for me, the brand like KISS that can identify with a black audience, a young UK audience, people that are just into culture and the sort of music that we play, that, you know, the feedback from them has been great.
How did the partnership come about, Rebecca? Did Ray come to you with a bit of paper in hand saying, I've got this idea?
Yeah, he just waited outside my house for about a week, and, you know, it was just relentless, to be honest.
I'm actually outside your house now.
Oh my god. So actually, you know, full disclosure, Ray and I have known each other for an awfully long time. Ray was a foundational member of BBC One Extra, and I worked there as a broadcast assistant when I was 20 years old. And so Ray and I worked together for a long time, and he obviously kind of launched and landed that amazing brand into the world. And then obviously Ray moved on and I moved on, and we both moved into different areas of sort of content making and broadcast. And I just knew from afar that he was, you know, setting up this incredible indie playmaker group that's making programs and documentaries and TV and animations and social and all of this stuff that really spoke to a part of the audience that's massively underserved in mainstream media. And when I started at KISS last year, I felt really on that mission as well, with this incredibly potent brand that was just a little bit sleepy when it came to a particular type of the audience, and maybe some we'd lost a fair bit of audience over the past few years just by, maybe, I don't know, I don't have all the answers, I don't know if I've got it right yet, but it, to my mind, it was an opportunity to sort of reconnect with black audiences, with younger audiences, and just with people that had kind of, you know, missed the roots of what KISS was really sort of founded on, just one of the sort of lofty ambitions. So knowing that the sort of combination of like, oh my god, there's this fund that funds stuff that you can't normally get to do at commercial radio, knowing that the Playmaker group was in existence and knowing what mission I was on, it all sort of came together. And Ray and I both were throwing lots of ideas around sort of informally once we were back in touch, sort of thing, when I'd sort of taken on this job and before. And actually, I think I remember, like, we had worked on carnival programming for KISS last summer that the Audio Content Fund also funded, which was amazing. And quite soon after that project, you know, we were quite invigorated about working together again, and it was really cool, and all of those under the bonnet benefits were there for the team for me. And I think I phoned him up going like, got his thought and what, and he said, oh my god, I was gonna talk to you about exactly the same idea. So it was just one of those amazing, I think, Ray, that's how it was for me anyway, mate. But yeah, came together. That's really easily.
And Ray, how does it compare for you? So I'm assuming doing commissions for the BBC versus doing commissions for a commercial radio station like KISS that probably doesn't have the sort of infrastructure around we're used to having commissions in, that kind of thing. What's it like for you as a production company working with a broadcaster like KISS?
It's really interesting, actually, because, like, as a small production company, one of the things that we kind of thrive off is the opportunity to have the confidence to do things. And sometimes you know, we do masses of work for the BBC, and there are, you know, undoubted strengths for it in doing something with a very sort of scaffolded structure. With Chris, for me, working in the commercial sector, it was about the leadership, really. And like, she's too modest to say it, but I don't think this programme would have worked without somebody like Rebecca, who would have, you know, she's not only kind of shown us that this is the kind of show that she wants, but she's actually made a big point of giving us the freedom and the confidence to be able to tackle issues. I mean, it takes a brave, you know, station head to talk about some of the things that we've spoken about in the last 8 weeks, ranging from, you know, doing programs about identity and culture in Liverpool and the way young black guys feel in Liverpool, right through to the, you know, rolling into the river of Edward Colston's statue in Bristol. And, you know, at no point has Rebecca ever said to me, I don't want to talk about this, I don't want to do this, let's steer clear of that, or this might upset this person. Like, that freedom and that level of expression, not only as a production company, but for Swazi as a presenter, makes all the difference. Honestly, it really does, because you're kind of going into it not thinking, we're not producing not to be wrong, we're producing to be right. And from a mentality perspective, that makes a massive difference.
That's really amazing. You're doing 12 weeks on this one, I think 12 episodes, isn't it? And then do you think after that, it's a case of, right, we can put this out to more of a commercial funding stream?
Yeah, that's the aim. The aim is to go, here's a body of work, here's an intention, here's how it might look in its next iteration, but here's the chops that we've built up. Here's how we integrate it into the station. Here's loads of like examples of like our drive time presenters talking to Swazi, the presenter, about this really deep stuff, you know, to challenge perception, so that there are maybe sponsors that don't normally interact with KISS or with radio around this sort of stuff. They go, all right, I normally sponsor online documentaries, but maybe I could get involved in this. Or maybe there are some more cultural sponsors who don't think that KISS FM is a place for them that we can work with on something like this. So, yeah, I absolutely want to bring it back. And I really like the series nature of it, so we can really wrap our arms around it properly.
And how has it changed, Rebecca? You were saying there's a bit on the report that asks, how has this changed the way you work?
Yeah. I love that bit. I've always got loads to write. It's like, how long have you got?
Just made me work harder.
There's more to do. No, it's like a couple of things. It's kind of the, like I say, there's a bit of a sort of mission that you feel on when you're running a radio station, because you're not just like delivering audio files to people. You're like trying to deliver an atmosphere, and you're trying to deliver like something that connects and something they're going to tell their mates about. That's really hard. So when you do projects that sort of ignite passion and behind the scenes, or you do things that are a little bit different, whether they go right or not, it just ignites a bit of energy. And so I think it's just started to really, the bold way of saying it is like changing commercial radio one piece at a time. And the kind of the pedestrian way of saying it is, you know, it really does make people sort of feel like they can do things kind of on the ground. They go, all right, well, and also sort of opens their eyes to independent production companies. It makes you feel that annoying narrative that some annoying person will say on Twitter every few months, and like, isn't radio dead yet? Is it going to? No, it's not. No. It's evolving. It's growing. It comes in all these different shapes and sizes. And so things like this just totally change the way you think. So therefore, they change the way you work.
Tough question to finish on, Ray. Becky, you might have to pitch in. Is there a particular clip or a moment in the programme at all that you think we should play out on?
I think there's quite a few, but I think the one that has kind of hit me the most was on this week's show, actually. So for this week, we are doing a one-to-one interview with Mark Prince, who is the father of Kyan Prince, a 15-year-old QPR Academy footballer who was stabbed to death. We went to QPR to interview Mark as a one-to-one about the day he heard his son had been stabbed. And he also talks about QPR renaming the stadium after his son. So the stadium is actually called the Kyan Prince Foundation Stadium now. And he was completely honest and completely open and sat with us for an hour and came away from it saying, I've done interviews for Sky, BBC, loads of places, but this is one of my favourite ones because I was more honest now than I've ever been. And a big part of that is, one, having the space to do it, not doing 2 or 3 minutes, but doing an hour. And two, the growth of somebody like Swazi as a presenter who can sit and hold a head-to-head discussion like that. And it was kind of a very, you know, if I could bottle what the show does or what the Audio Content Fund has done, that would be it.
You couldn't kill someone and go through the process and carry on smiling like you do and boasting when you go off to make out like you just duppied someone on road and you just bore up somebody on road. You wouldn't be boasting if you saw the real pain of what you just now done. If you saw the brothers, the sisters, the cousins, the aunties, the uncles, the grandparents, if you saw all the friends and the people that you had really just created a legacy for yourself, and the evil and the pain that you've just began the process of, I think you'd do anything in your power to reverse time.
Really powerful, I think you'll agree. You've just heard a piece from Kiss Life, which is a magazine program on Kiss, created by the Playmaker Group and funded by the Audio Content Fund. So those were three of the projects that we funded out of 115. So it's been quite an exciting couple of years for the Audio Content Fund. And there is now a new round open. So I thought it worth grabbing Managing Director of the Audio Content Fund, Sam Bailey, and just nitpicking a few things that we can get sorted for the next round. So, Sam, what do we need to know?
Yes. Hi, Kate.
Hi.
Well, the round, as you say, the round is open. It's actually halfway through. Closes on the 14th of June. We're in our third year of the Audio Content Fund, as you know, and we have got £1 million to distribute this year. We're going to do it in three even rounds, all things going as planned. That was the plan we had last year as well, but obviously we all know how last year went. So, but yeah, basically a third of £1 million to distribute in this round. It's an open brief, as most of them have been. All the guidelines are on the Audio Content Fund website. Have a read of those, work out how your idea fits in with our evaluation criteria, because the government have asked us to assess the ideas by this set group of criteria. Every idea has to be broadcast on the radio, has to have come with a guaranteed broadcast from a proper radio station and have significant reach behind it. If it's going on community radio, that must be networks of at least five community radio stations or small commercial stations. And then when all the ideas come in, the panel members like you, Kate,
hi,
sit and read them, and then we have a meeting to work out which ones were your favorite ones. So I'll turn the question back to you. What do the panel, as a member of the panel, what do the panel like to read? What do they, being that it's an open brief and we're not looking for a specific quota of this, that and the other, but when you see a bid, when you've got 30 or 40 bids to read, what makes something stand out to you?
Ooh, I think predominantly, I think that we'd all agree that a really great idea that jumps off the page is the first thing. And then it's the how has this been thought through part. So how has this been thought through in terms of actually three things? Firstly, when we talk about audience, reach is really important. But the thing that's really important is how is this going to impact the listener in a way that the content on the station that this is going on to hasn't already. So it's about looking for things that are completely new to that audience, but also how do they impact the individual? Two, how is it thought out in terms of the station? So how is it going to be promoted across the station? How is it going to be absorbed by the station programming, particularly on the larger stations? I think it's nice to see when the partnership between the production company and the radio station has thought through more than we're going to pop this on in the evening because we're not sure about it, to we're going to put this on in the evening, but we're also going to represent it across the day, or we're going to do it in small vignettes that live across the day and it's going to have a really good big reach as a result. So those things are good. And then I think this is something that we all talk about. The budget just has been really thought through. So sometimes in the budget, you know, it's that understanding of where finances are going in the right way. We're still getting some things through that in the budget we've had to go, we don't actually fund that part. You know, we don't fund the social media marketing bit. And equally, you know, maybe you need to reserve some budget for other production areas. So it's just those three things. It's audience impact as much as it is reach. It's station absorption, if you like. How does it weave into the fabric of the station? And then it's the thinking through on the budget. But predominantly, as long as it's a great idea, those are, and it fulfills the criteria, then those are the areas that really sing to us.
And I think I remember you guys often talk about that thing you said at the top about the idea leaping out of the page, and it's that's a skill in writing a bid.
Yes,
is communicating the ideas really, really clearly, because we get quite a lot of muddled entries. Muddled is often a bit of feedback you ask me to take back, and you can kind of, you look at it and you sort of go, I've no idea what I'm going to be hearing here.
Yes.
And like it sounds like you obviously feel like you have a strong idea of it, author, but you haven't conveyed that in the writing. So it's almost like, I mean, test it out on people, not face to face talking to them about it, but give them the thing to read and say, does that make sense to you? Because that's all you've got to go on, isn't it? We don't do face to face pitches. It's all about the write up.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think every great program has to have a great synopsis, doesn't it? Whether it be, you know, as audio creators, it's more and more important for us, even now we're moving into podcast land and all of that, to have a great synopsis. And so to capture that in that first couple of, you know, boxes that we have is really important. And, you know, we're reading through a significant number of entries, so you can get a bit of brain fuzz. I mean, as with all these things, if you've ever been a judge on a judging panel, that's how I kind of think of it.
Yeah.
You know, if you've ever been a judge on a judging panel, use it to help you fill in these bids, because you know you have to stand out from the crowd. So making a really clear idea is really important. Mm.
And I think another thing that you guys often talk about a lot is the expertise side of things. So, so you might be a really experienced audio production company, but you've never done drama before. And so you're bidding for drama. So it's like you look at those two things and go, well, I can see that you're good at audio.
Yeah.
But where are the experts for the drama or the science or the whatever it is that this piece is? You have to show that you've got the right experts on the team, right? And name them.
Yes, absolutely. You know, it's really worth making sure that you've got those, as you said, it's the names of the people and the expertise that mean that you've got the support to guide it. Because, you know, we've got a responsibility to make sure that you as a production company are going to be able to come through with this stuff. So while, you know, often we'll know you're great, you know, it will have come across in the bid that you are great producers of maybe music content. But if you're going into drama, you need to have that absolute expertise and support. Yeah. And particularly it comes up around children's programming as well, that, you know, making sure, because children's programming is a whole other area. You know, there's safeguarding and all sorts of things in there. It is quite high risk if you've never done it before. So it's about making sure that you've got those expertise. Yeah. And also, you know, I'm saying that like, oh, just make sure you've got those expertise. You know, there are people in this industry who specialise in those areas, and you can call upon them to consult and to help. So, you know, it's not unusual to see that in the bid as well.
It's about the specifics, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because I think you get a lot of bids where you're reading it and go, I mean, it's particularly, I think some of our evaluation criteria, for example, diversity, you know, part of one of the evaluation criteria is to represent the nation properly, and we quite often get people writing say, oh yeah, we'll make sure that everything we do is diverse.
Oh.
You're like, we need specifics, I think is what you often say, is right. So who are the contributors, specifically name them, that you're going to use, and who are the members of your team, specifically name them, that you're going to hire to do this project to make sure that you're representative.
Oh gosh, we've all been there. You know, we've all written commissions where we're like, oh gosh, we haven't thought about that box before we're pressing send on the deadline, you know. But it is really important, because now it's so competitive. It is a massive letdown when you see it and it's like, oh yeah, we will do it. And it's like, well, will you? Where's the evidence that you will? Where is it that you've either done it in the past? That sometimes helps. Or what are you going to do? What have you got set up? I think sometimes it's really useful when you're filling the bids in and the application forms in to think about, I am doing it now, rather than this is what we are going to do. So if I am doing this now, what does that actually sound like, look like, feel like? And that can really help in terms of the application, because it gives us a sense of what's actually going to be happening and how it's going to sound.
Well, it closes on the 14th of June. As I said, check out the guidelines on the website. Do read the guidelines properly. Find your partner radio stations. And if you can't do it in time, I appreciate this, only 12 days away. If you can't do it in time, then there will be another round. There's two more rounds planned for this year. And who knows, we may get some funding to carry on beyond year three.
I hope so. Thank you very much, Sam. Is there anything that else that we need to think of that we've missed? Don't leave it to the last minute, I'd say.
Everyone leaves it to the last minute.
Just make sure someone proofreads it as well. That's always really useful. But yes, looking forward to seeing more. I hope you've enjoyed hearing from those three projects and from Sam Bailey, Managing Director of the Audio Content Fund. And hopefully from them, you can hear a few little tips and tricks in terms of your admissions and application forms. The round closes on. When does it close, Sam?
14th of June.
And all of the projects that we have funded over the last 2 years, all 115 of them, can be found on the Audio Content Fund website, which is, Sam?
audiocontentfund.org.uk.
Thank you very much. Good luck for the next round.
Thank you very much, Kate. All interesting stuff. And thank you very much, Sam, as well. Don't forget, the Audio Content Fund has another £1 million to distribute in year three. And you can put your bids in now. Your applications, get them in. The window is open. And don't forget, if you want more details, as Sam said, the address is audiocontentfund.org.uk. This is Roy Martin. Just leaves me to say thank you very much for listening. And we'll be back with you again very soon.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics.
Original music for this podcast was composed by Mikasa.